This is Sheila Winstead speaking on behalf of Roseau County Historical Society. While looking at some of the history volumes at the Roseau County Museum, I came upon a spiral-bound book by Grace Landeen, dated May 1972, which was a thesis for her Master of Science in Education degree. It had been donated by Kelly Falk and was titled A Study of Three Chippewa Families at Warroad, Minnesota and Their Historical and Cultural Contributions. She thanks the many people who helped her gather information about the prominent families of Kakagisic, Lightning, and Thunder, who had made their home in the Warroad vicinity before any white men came. Mrs. Landeen says, "No history of Warroad would be complete without including Kakagisic, medicine man of the Warroad Chippewa. He was believed to be 124 years old at the time of his death in 1968. A brief story of his life may help to describe the early life of the Chippewa in this area. Information about Kakagisic came from Mrs. Angus, his only living daughter, Verna, his daughter-in-law, Florence Kakagisic, married to his grandson Robert, and Robert Jr., his great-grandson. Mrs. Landeen notes that this was obtained by interview, photographs furnished by the family, and tapes. Julius Anderson had made some records and also added material by interview. Here is Mrs. Landeen's story about Kakagisic. In a small dome-shaped hut covered with birch bark and located close to the banks of the Warroad River, a baby boy was born to Osha Wash and May Muska Washi. The naming of a Chippewa child was a thing of ritualistic and divine importance. A child's true name must be revealed by the Great Spirit to the parents or other relatives. Perhaps May Muska Washi dreamed of a beautiful sky that never darkened, so she called her son Kakagisic, which in Chippewa means everlasting sky. Kakagisic spent his childhood in a primitive society. He lived in a teepee or domed hut with reed mats piled one on top of the other as insulation from the cold ground. He was nursed by his mother and weaned on a broth made from dried fish, venison, and berries. For diapers, the Indian mother used soft moss. The common dress for a boy learning to walk and play was leggings made of deerskin. A long pullover jacket fringed at the bottom completed his body covering. An Indian boy's education began at an early age. In a country with a comparatively severe climate of long winters and short summers, survival depended upon learning to provide enough food and shelter to live out the long winter. He had to learn to fish, hunt, and gather berries, and to plant corn and potatoes. Some seed potatoes had to be kept from year to year, so in the fall he would help his mother dig a deep hole, line it with hay, put in a few bushels of potatoes, and cover it well to protect them from frost. Potatoes were also cut in slices like our modern-day potato chips and dried to prevent spoilage. Ducks, venison, fish, and moose meat were used for food. During the hot, dry days of summer, the meat was dried in long strips and hung over a framework of small saplings. A low, smoky fire beneath the strips kept the insects away. This strip of meat was referred to by white men as jerky. Eating it was like trying to eat a piece of leather, but it was sufficient nourishment to carry along on a hunting trip. To prepare jerky for a meal, it was pounded into a flour-like consistency called kuskiwok. This substance could be boiled with corn or potatoes and made into a gravy. The absence of any dairy products and cooking oil was not a hardship. The Indians had developed the art of extracting fish oils from the abundant sturgeon in Lake of the Woods. The skin of this fish was preserved, made pliable, and shaped into a vessel, glued with a substance processed from a part of the inside of the fish. When the vessel was dried and set, it was filled with fish oils, moose tallow, or bear grease. Up to the age of 14, the Chippewa boy worked mainly with the women who did the fishing, gardening, berry picking, and weaving. At 14, he was old enough to hunt with the men, paddling a canoe to Willow Creek, Buffalo Point, or Reed River to bring back moose, bear, or deer. In 1858, Minnesota was admitted to the Union. shortly before Kokkigisik's 14th birthday. At that age, he was not aware that he had become a citizen of the state of Minnesota. As far as this Chippewa Indian was concerned, his world was not very big. Once a year, he would accompany his parents on a visit to the Rosa River to visit his cousin Mickinac. Another annual event was the powwow at Kuchiching, now known as Fort Frances, Ontario. Bemidji, the southern limit, and Kenora to the north were the boundaries for this Chippewa Indian. The commerce of Canada was carried on by water by the voyagers in 40-foot canoes, paddling from Grand Portage on Lake Superior through Rainy Lake and Rainy River into and across Lake of the Woods to Northwest Angle Inlet. They would land at the Hudson Bay Post in Harrison Creek, Manitoba, and go as far west into the river as they could paddle. There, the goods were loaded onto ox carts, the big-wheeled Red River cart, and sent into Winnipeg and points west. In the summer of 1840, there appeared on Lake of the Woods a fleet of steamboats built by shipbuilders from the Great Lakes. There were as many as 50 of these wood-burning boats traveling the water of Lake of the Woods. Since Warroad was about 30 miles south of the course that boats traveled from the mouth of the Rainy River to the northwest angle, it was seldom that one of these boats came down to the Warroad port. It was on a visit to the Angle Country that Kokkigisik probably saw his first white man. I'll continue this account of Kokkigisik next week. Thanks to Wild 102 for this time to tell our county stories.